This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
It's 6 o'clock and time again for Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. We are broadcasting from the campus of the University of Alabama. Good evening. My name is Dr. B.J. Gunther, and I'm the host of the show along with my colleague and producer, Catherine Howell. And in case you don't know, this show is about mental and physical health issues that affect college students, and in particular, UA students. So you can listen to us each Tuesday night at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM, or you can listen online at wbuafm.ua.edu, or you can also download the MyTuner radio app and type in WBUA FM 90.7 if you want to listen. Also, this is our last show for the academic year. We don't do shows in the summer. We'll be back in the fall. If you have any show ideas for our fall show topics, email those to me at brainmattersradio@wbuafm.ua.edu. And of course, I'll consider using your show idea topic, your show topic idea. I don't know how to say that. I kind of keep a running list when people give me ideas of what we're going to do or what we're going to pursue. And, you know, last night I was watching something on TV and they started talking about, I know this is probably a radical idea, but I'm interested in psychedelics for use of the treatment of certain mental health illnesses and disorders. And so I'm going to try to have that as a show in the fall. We tried to do it this semester, but I just had a hard time finding, guest who would be willing to be on the show. So I'm going to still keep researching that and see if we can make that happen for next fall. But tonight's topic is it's interesting. And it seems like we, at least once a year, we always talk about some sort of eating disorder, whether it's anorexia, bulimia, orthorexia treatments. But tonight we're going to talk about cognitive behavioral therapy for eating disorders, because cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, is the leading evidence-based treatment for eating disorders. And CBT is a psychotherapeutic approach that involves a variety of techniques. And these approaches help individuals to understand the interaction between his or her thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, and develop strategies to change unhelpful thoughts and behaviors in order to improve mood and functioning. It sounds so easy, doesn't it? It just sounds so easy, but it's not. I know this is difficult, and it's difficult to work with. I think personally, in my 20 plus years experience, it is challenging to work with individuals who are struggling with eating disorders. My guest tonight is Sharman Marshall Rutherford, and Sharman is a licensed professional counselor like myself. She's the owner of her practice, All Things New Counseling Services, here in Tuscaloosa. Thanks, Sharman, for being on the air with us.
Thank you, BJ. I'm excited to be here. I'm really excited.
Do you agree with me that eating disorders are very challenging individuals to work with? And I have, not to criticize, I'm just stating a fact, and I have worked with substance abusers as well as eating disordered people. And I kind of put those two, issues kind of in the same challenging category for me personally as a therapist. How about you?
I started out in substance abuse. So substance abuse, those clients are my favorite, or some of my favorite clients. So
I remember that in the future when I'm making referrals.
They are very near and dear to my heart. So I enjoy working with substance abuse clients, but eating disorder clients, and it's the same mindset as the substance abusing clients, but that they're so complex. No one just wakes up one day and says, I want to be addicted to crack cocaine, or I want to wake up and hate my body and not want to be in it. There are so many factors that go into the development of an eating disorder or an addiction. And it's just so complex. It's like that client is an onion and you kind of have to peel back layer by layer by layer get to what the root of the problem is.
You said you started out in substance abuse. I forgot to ask you, tell the listeners about yourself, your credentials, and why you're interested in this topic that we're talking about tonight.
Okay. I am a licensed professional counselor. I got my professional counseling Master of Arts from Liberty University in 2008. And for a while, I was with the Tuscaloosa County Public Defender's Office in the Phoenix House, and I did my internship with both of them. And then I started out in substance abuse. So I worked in the substance abuse field for about 5 years, and then I was at Taylor Hardin Secure Medical Facility. I was a habilitation treatment provider there for about 4 or 5 years. And so that's where I've gained most of my experience. But when I opened up my private practice 4 years ago, I got naturally a lot of college students because of where I'm located, I believe. But I found that so many of my clients had eating disorders and they were in the process of either developing an eating disorder or they were in the throes of a long-term eating disorder. And that kind of went along. That is something I also saw in the substance abuse field. So I decided that I wanted to pursue the CEDS, which is the Certified Eating Disorder Specialist credential. So I'm in the process of doing that. You have to have about 2,000 hours of direct client interaction to get that credential. And you have to take some courses and an exam. And I'm about through with that process. So I will be a CEDS. But that's kind of how I got interested in it. It's a very challenging mental illness. I see it all the time. And I don't believe, well, I know that it's not limited to college campuses. It's everywhere. And it's finding its way into high schools and middle schools. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's where it's starting. And, you know, if we can get these clients before they're in their 30s or 40s, you know, they have a much better chance of surviving the eating disorder. I had done some research leading up to this and found that eating disorders have the second highest mortality rate only after opioid overdoses. So you have opioid overdoses as the number one mental illness mortality rate. And then you have number two is eating disorders. So I just think it's really important. We're losing folks and we shouldn't be doing that. So it made me want to go into the field.
Well, and you know, I'm shocked that you've been around as long as you have, and you and I have not come in contact. I really have not heard of you until a few years, maybe a year or so ago, to be honest with you. You know,
it's probably because I was in my organizations, you know, that I was working for, and just, you know how it is when you work in an organization and, you know, you see your clients.
And Taylor Hardin, let me tell you. Taylor Hardin, for those who do not know, tell me if I'm describing Taylor Hardin correctly. Taylor Hardin is a secure medical facility for people who have mental illnesses, too.
It's for males.
Yes. Did I say that right?
It's primarily for, it is for males who have been deemed not guilty of their crime for mental defect or mental instability. So it is a forensics hospital.
But I know we're talking about eating disorders, but I have got to ask you.
Okay.
Because I'm curious. Were you ever afraid working there?
One day. I had one day that we had a client who had just been acting out, and, you know, they clients feed off of each other, of course, when they're in a residential setting like that. And I had one client who was acting out that normally didn't do that. And so I was very fearful, and I was doing the group by myself, so yes. I was very fearful, and so I finished my group and got out. But really, to be honest, that when I worked there and when I worked at the Phoenix House, those were my two favorite jobs that I've had in my whole career,
aside from my private. Probably, you know, like working here, I tell people all the time, it's never boring.
No.
I mean, am I right, Catherine? It's busy. It's very busy, and there's a high demand here at the counseling center, but it's never boring.
Yeah. That's how it was there.
For those who are listening, and we're talking about cognitive behavioral therapy to use with eating disorders, but can you give a general definition or description of what CBT is for those who have no idea?
Sure. It's big words that basically just, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy is a cognitive behavioral model of talk therapy that just acknowledges the importance of thoughts and the impact those thoughts have on your actions. So the premise is, if you have certain thoughts, you're going to have certain behaviors. So if you can go in with the help of a therapist or a mental health professional and change the way you're thinking and maybe some of the views that you have of the world, that is going to impact your actions, which will impact the way that you feel. So that's kind of the that's CBT broken down to the bare bones.
When you're working with a student, for instance, and let me ask you, what percentage would you say of your practice is working with college students?
Well, probably 75%.
So a high percentage.
Yeah.
So when you're working with somebody, do you mainly use CBT with everyone, or is it just with eating disorders, or, you know, do you switch it up sometimes?
Switch it up. I'm kind of eclectic, and it depends on what the client's individual needs are. You know, if I have a client come in who is a substance abuse, where it's a substance abuse situation, I would probably use motivational interviewing or something like that. Where on the flip side of that, I have also had to use motivational interviewing with some of my eating disorder folks, because, you know, when they come in, you don't know what level they're at, you know, are they ready for change? But CBT, I tend to use it a lot with the more difficult or the more challenging mental illnesses, just because of the efficacy of it and because it works. And I've seen it work. I know it works. And that's primarily why I use CBT. Go ahead.
I was going to say, how do you sell that to a student? You know what I mean? Yeah. How do you sell it to them?
I'll just say, you know, during the course of developing their treatment plan, we'll talk about what the students' needs are, where they want to see themselves, what their therapeutic objectives are. And then I'll say, okay, I think what will work best with that, and from what I have seen great success with, is with cognitive behavioral therapy. And then let me explain to you what that means. Because a lot of times people go to therapists and we throw out these terms like everybody knows what they mean, and they don't. You know, they think that we have some magic CBT, manual out there. Yes. And really, it's just a way of talking with people and forming thoughts and forming dialogue. And that really brings you into what the client is experiencing. And I've just seen it work. And so
are there other forms of CBT? Because I've read articles, some of the articles I read in doing a little bit of research, and some of just the knowledge that I have myself, is that I have heard of dialectical behavioral therapy, DBT, and acceptance and commitment therapy. Now, I don't claim to be an expert in either one of those, and I don't know if you are, but can you talk about a little bit about what those are, and can they be used with eating disorders too?
Sure, sure. Dialectical behavior therapy is basically a set of, I don't want to say skills, but it is more giving information and teaching skills, basically. It's skill-based. Skill-based learning is what I would say dialectical behavioral therapy is. I am more of a fan, and this is kind of new to me with acceptance and commitment therapy.
Me too. Yeah.
When you are working with eating disorders, to me, it makes perfect sense that you have to acknowledge and have the client accept where they are right now in this moment, but at the same time, offering them a commitment for them to choose a valued direction that they want to go in to achieve their therapeutic goal. So it's accepting what is in this moment, but also looking forward to what can be and what, you know,
what they're willing to do.
You need as an individual. Yeah. And it puts it more in the hands of the client. I believe it gives them more power over their treatment. And I think that's an asset for clients who are struggling with eating disorders based on their need for control. So I really have seen some success with ACT, and I'm starting to use that more in my practice along with the CBT.
That's good. That gives people options. If you'll hang on just a minute, we'll take a quick short break and then we'll come back and start back. I want to start back with an email question, if that's okay with you. So it's going to be spontaneous. So just stay with us. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm BJ Gunther. Tonight's our last show for the academic year. We won't start back up until the fall. And my guest tonight is Sharman Marshall Rutherford. She's an LPC, which is a licensed professional counselor here in private practice in Tuscaloosa/Northport, West Alabama, I'll say. We're talking tonight about cognitive behavioral therapy for eating disorders. And Sharman, when we left off, I wanted to ask an email question. So this sounds like it's from somebody who has knowledge about eating disorders. So
okay.
Here we go. How do young adults who struggle with avoidant restrictive food intake disorder seem to respond to CBT?
I have seen a little success with CBT, not a great deal of it, because the ARFID cases that come into my office, they are not as many in number as the anorexia nervosa or the bulimia. So yeah. I haven't had a lot of experience with CBT with ARFID. I will say that I think a lot of times DBT would be better for ARFID, just that branch of cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yes, yes.
Because of, I don't know if you know about this, BJ. I'm sure you probably do if you read books like I do and articles. But there is a strong correlation with clients who have ARFID also having some form or being slightly on the spectrum for autism. So it's not so much a position that the client has taken of, I don't want to gain weight, so I'm not going to eat. It's more of, I don't like the way this feels in my mouth.
Yes.
And so I'm going to avoid it and not eat it. So that has been something that I have seen.
Well, we did a show, Catherine, do you remember we did a show on ARFID? Just ARFID. Yeah. And okay. It's been years ago, so I can't even remember who my guest was. That's really bad, isn't it? I can't even remember who the guest was. But it seems like once I do a show, I just move on, you know. But we did one specifically for that topic because I'm embarrassed to say I really had never heard of it, but I had seen individuals who had that, but I didn't know it. Isn't that sad that your counselor didn't know it?
Therapist.
It's just not my specialty. And so it was years ago, but I believe if I remember correctly, I've told this story before, that the student I saw, he like would only eat three things ever. He would eat macaroni and cheese, like his grandmother's macaroni and cheese. It was something ridiculous. It was, I don't know how somebody can stay alive eating just mac and cheese, french fries, and it was like one other thing that was not healthy.
Yeah.
So that was like my wake up call.
Yeah. Yeah. I won't go into details for privacy, but I had a client who had been misdiagnosed with anorexia, and it was not anorexia. It was ARFID. And so, and for years, she kind of went along with this diagnosis and was not receiving the proper treatment. So it's really important. And, you know, I think sometimes with my clients, I mean, I ask so many questions and that's, and I know I'm kind of veering off topic. I do that sometimes.
Oh, that's okay. I will too.
But the proper assessment and asking those questions, being very detail oriented and getting the information so that you know, you know, because it's very, it can be very, what is the word I want to use? Very misguiding to assume that you know what someone has based on the way they look. Yeah. That's very,
it could be wrong. It could be health issues. Yeah. It could be hereditary. Right. I mean, they could have been sick.
Been any number of things. Mm-hmm. And they're so, and I'm also seeing a lot of clients with autoimmune disorders and they tend to be more on the thin side and, you know, in smaller bodies. So it's very challenging. And I think that, goes back to the importance of an accurate assessment.
Well, you know, here at the Counseling Center, I've been here for a number of years, and a lot has changed with regards to just the treatment of eating disorders for us. I mean, we are all considered generalists. Nobody specializes in one thing or the other, but we do offer an eating disorder support group. And we have for years. It's hard to make sometimes because I think a lot of people, sometimes it's not fun to come to group, you know, because you're talking about difficult topics and problems. But yeah, I've seen the way things, I look back and I think about the first student I ever had who had an eating disorder was very resistant and very angry. She was being made to come to the counseling center. I'll just tell you that. It's a long story. I'm not going to go into it, but she, it was not her choice, but she was very sick. Mm-hmm. And do you see many students or people, it doesn't have to be a student, with eating disorders who are very angry or, they're resistant, manipulative, but angry at you for suggesting things.
I get that frequently, or they'll come in and they're angry, but they don't really know who to direct that anger towards. Yeah. So often it comes out to us.
Yes.
But I think like it makes sense to me because when someone comes in for treatment with an eating disorder, we're asking them to give up something that has been very much an active part of their life. I mean, it's like asking them to get rid of a trauma bond relationship with an abusive partner. That's very much what a breakup of a client with their eating disorder is. So, sure, they're going to be mad at us. And I can work through the resistance. Usually clients are willing to. I haven't really had a situation where parents sent their college student to me and then the client didn't want the therapy. Most everyone that has come to me has wanted the help to some degree, but they do come in angry. And, oh, yeah. And I think it's a testament to how hard it has been to carry this burden and to stay in control and to be on top of your food portions and to, you know, ooh, you're not going out to eat with your friends because you're scared you're going to eat too many tacos. And it's I would be angry too.
It's exhausting. It's exhausting. Yeah. You mentioned in the last segment, something about ready for change. How do you, as a therapist, how do you gauge when somebody is ready for change or may not be? Because they may not. I've had students come in, they're not ready yet. They're just
not. Right. And, you know, for me, I think I get a lot of feedback when they are coming to sessions. You know, if they're showing up for sessions, that indicates that they're willing to do something, usually. If they're participating in their therapy and not just sitting there giving me yes, no answers to the questions. I have an app that I use. I think a lot of people with eating disorders are using it. There is an app that I use that's free for my clients that I pay for that allows them to go in and and log some of their food. It allows them to log their meals and their emotions and their feelings and their thoughts. And so that, what I try to do is to replace that negative thinking and that restrictive thinking with having them fill out the prompts in this app. And so I have had success with this app as well. So I'm not really sure how that goes into gauging motivation. I think, you know, if they're not willing to do the app, then they're probably not ready. That has been the biggest thing I've seen.
Because that sounds simple. You know, that sounds like a simple tool to help them. Yeah.
And so I've had great success with that app so far.
Do you think maybe this is a little bit like what we were talking about with the resistance that some individuals have to changing? What's been your biggest challenge working with eating disordered clients?
You know, a lot of times this sounds bad, but a lot of times it's the parents.
And no, the family it doesn't sound system. Bad. It's the truth.
The family system is usually one of the biggest, it's either an enabler. And they allow the client to get away with some of these behaviors and you know, or a lot of times I have found recently very much that the family members are driving the eating disorder by the mother being very much into diet culture. The client will say,
wow,
you know, growing up, my mom was always on a diet. We always had to eat healthy.
Yep.
We could never have hamburgers. We could never have cookies. And, you know, I think, you know, everybody wants to be healthy for whatever that means. But, you know, when you go beyond healthy and it's such regimented rules about what you allow your child to have and not have, that develops into long-term eating issues.
It does.
And it impacts their relationship with food, you know. And so for me, a lot of one of the biggest challenges is getting clients to buy into the idea that food is not good or bad. Food is neutral. You know, there are no bad foods, there are no good foods, there is food. And then your consumption of it, your the moderation that you use with it, that is what determines if it is a healthy choice or not.
Right. And so I know for the students I've seen here who have had mild, and we're able to keep them mild eating disorders. Uh-huh. Either they're just starting out with one, or you know, they're testing the waters a little bit. Yeah. I don't know if we all do this, but I think we all agree to do like a team approach. Therapy, nutritionist, and a medical doctor. Do you do the same thing?
Yes, I try to very hard. But in Tuscaloosa, now if they're a student, I am able to have better success because y'all have the psychiatrist over at the student health center. And you know, I can usually find a dietitian in Tuscaloosa or Birmingham that the clients are willing to see. So I do have more success with my students just because there are more resources to form a treatment team for them. Yes. Folks who are adults who aren't in school or who are younger and not in school, it's more difficult to get that team approach because there are so many doctors who are not informed properly about eating disorders. And I didn't realize that until I got into this myself.
Yeah.
And I would never profess to know more, you know, than a medical physician, but it just seems like in Tuscaloosa, for whatever reason, we don't have people that offer that. And I wish we did. Maybe if we have some people that offer that you know of, maybe you can hook me up with them so that I can form a relationship.
It's really shocking because you would think in a university town with a university as large as Alabama is, University of Alabama is now, it's really shocking. Fortunately, we are close enough to Birmingham.
Yeah.
And there are resources in Birmingham, 45 minutes away, I would say, 50 minutes away. But a lot of our students don't have transportation, too.
Right.
You know? So there's always some challenges or obstacles that you have to think about, you know.
Yeah.
What do you think about, well, let's do this. I'll save the next question for when we come back from our break. Let's take another break. And when we come back, I'll ask you about eating disorders and personality disorders. That always gets interesting.
Okay.
So you're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7, the Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther. We're talking tonight about cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, and eating disorders. And my guest is Sharman Marshall Rutherford, who's an LPC, a licensed professional counselor here in private practice in the West Alabama area. And Sharman, I was mentioning before the break about, is there a correlation or a relationship between an eating disorder and a personality disorder?
I definitely think there can be. I don't want people to hear that and think I have an eating disorder, so I must have a personality disorder.
Yes, right.
So let's clarify that. If you think you have an eating disorder, that does not necessarily mean that you have a personality disorder. However, you know, there is that dual diagnosis, that co-occurring disorder where most people who have an eating disorder are going to have another form of mental illness or a personality disorder. So I see a lot of anxiety with the eating disorders. I see a lot of depression. I see a lot of PTSD.
Yes.
And then I have seen some borderline personality disorders. I don't know I don't know if the correlation is higher in eating disorder folks than it is in clients who don't have eating disorders, because I just don't see a lot of the borderline personality disorder. Yeah. I don't see a lot of that.
What we were talking about resources, you know, and physicians who treat eating disorders. What about inpatient facilities? Do you ever have to send somebody for inpatient treatment? And if so, where is the closest inpatient facility to us?
For females, Magnolia Creek in, I believe it's Columbiana. Magnolia Creek, I have referred people there.
Yep.
There is Alsana in Birmingham.
Yep.
There is, what else is in Birmingham? Alsana.
There used to be one called Castle. Was it Castle? Catherine, can you remember Castle? I can't remember now. But I don't know if it's still in existence.
I don't think that one's staying anymore, because I haven't heard that one. Mm-hmm. But there are some great programs, but there just aren't a lot here in Alabama. But Magnolia Creek is a good one. I was trying to think of a male facility, because that's something we haven't talked about. And, you know, males can suffer from eating disorders too. And I think a lot of times they get kind of overlooked in the eating disorder group, but they're certainly out there. They're certainly out there. I think for males, it starts out more of like trying to look like an athlete, or they're trying to be physically fit, and it starts out that way, and then it kind of takes on, it morphs into this eating disorder.
Sometimes the students, I've seen probably a handful of guys here in Alabama, and sometimes it'll start out with working out. You know, they're able to cover it up and hide it because they're working out. But it's an excess, it's an excess. So we've got another email question. So there's several questions in this one person sent several questions. When should a person seek treatment for an eating disorder?
Okay. People who are struggling should seek treatment for an eating disorder anytime that medical complications are occurring. If there's any kind of medical complications, such as unstable heart rate, unstable blood pressure levels, fainting, if their BMI is under 18.5, that's considered extremely low weight. Anytime there's life interference from the eating disorder. So like if they are not able to go to class because they're so busy counting calories and meal prepping and weighing their food and body checking and checking the scale, you know, if they can't get out the door in the mornings because their eating disorder is interfering with their life in that way, all of those are reasons to seek treatment.
What about the insurance? Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, anytime that they feel concerned, they feel that this is something that I'm not in control of, this is something, or on the other side, if everybody around them is telling them they have a problem and they just haven't accepted that yet, then that would be a time to seek treatment too,
because they would get that
24-hour continuity of care.
What about insurance companies? Do insurance, this is the next question the person has. Do insurance companies pay for eating disorder treatment?
Yes. Well, some of them. The ones that I work with have. Now, it will depend on the insurance company how much they will pay and what the co-payment or the co-insurance rate is. And that'll vary from policy to policy. But many of the bigger plans are stepping up and paying for eating disorder treatment now.
This person, the last question is,
you know, how long? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, the last question was, what if I can't afford treatment?
Then if she could not afford inpatient treatment, they could ask about scholarship opportunities. They could, you know, possibly talk to a family member. Some outpatient, good outpatient therapy, following what the therapist and recommends. But I will say that if she or he needed outpatient, that she's working with a therapist and a registered dietitian at the same time.
At the same time.
Because the registered dietitian is going to know more about the nutritional side of it. Like, I personally don't know like what the expected amount of calories are, you know, and how much of this nutrient people need. So that's why it's important for that team approach, like you had talked about, BJ, and, you know, having a treatment team involved. So the more hands or the more eyes that are on the client, even though it may make them uncomfortable, that's what's going to be better for them in the long run and get them the best results out of treatment.
I think it scares them sometimes. Yeah. I have had students who I've suggested the treatment team approach and tried to explain it to them, but it scares them because I think then they realize, oh my goodness, this is really serious.
Right. Because for a lot of the clients that we get, we are the only people that know. We are the first people that they're telling.
So
if they come to us for two or three sessions and we say, you know, well, let me tell you, we need to get this treatment approach. You know, oftentimes they do kind of buck at that, but it is important. But you have to remember, you know, some of these people have had these eating disorders since, you know, I have one client that's had an eating disorder since elementary school.
Yeah.
So, you know, she learned how to manipulate food and how to get rid of excess food that she did not want. And, you know, that developed into a lifelong thing. And then she was a dancer and and then I've had clients on swim teams. So, you know, I think that it's very important that when we suggest the treatment team approach, that we prepare them for what it is, but also talk to them about what it is.
Right. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned the, dancer or the athlete, is it true? Do you feel like, because I definitely feel like that some of the activities that students participate in are just perpetuating the eating disorder, whether they're a dancer or whether they're an athlete, or, you know, a lot of my students who are struggling with eating disorders are nutrition majors.
Yeah. I've seen that too.
So, you know, that's not the best major for somebody with an eating disorder, I don't think, because I think it just gives them more resources to obsess over it.
As there isn't enough with social media.
And, oh, isn't that the
truth?
You
know, all of that. I could get on that social media bandwagon and talk for a long time, but it's just a lot of
inundation of resource, inundation of information, just overstimulation
24/7 all the time.
Yeah.
And it's so many sources, you know, they've got their phone, and they've got their TV, and they've got their, I don't even know what the other devices are now, but I mean, there's so much out there, not to mention magazines and, you know, things that, you know,
they see.
Right.
That influences,
you know, and all the commercials with lose those 10 pounds you can't lose. We can help you lose them today. You know, all of those are very damaging messages that we send to people. And, you know, I understand that there are times when people have excess weight and it can be a health issue. But when we are telling everybody who are overweight by what is it called, the ideal body weight.
Oh, gosh.
You know, the ideal BMI.
Yeah.
You know, if we're telling everybody that's not their ideal BMI that they need to be on a diet, that is not, someone is dropping the ball somewhere.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I hate to just throw that out there, but somebody is dropping the ball somewhere.
It's scary. Listen, we're going to take our last break. When we come back, I want you to talk about your group that you're doing here in town and some more resources. So stay with me. We'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
You're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm BJ Gunther. We're talking with Sharman Marshall Rutherford, who's an LPC, licensed professional counselor, here in Tuscaloosa / Northport, West Alabama. We're talking about eating disorders tonight and how to treat them, specifically cognitive behavioral therapy for treatment of eating disorders. And we were just talking about some of the majors that people major in here at the university that I think just is not very helpful if you have an eating disorder, like nutrition. Nothing is wrong with the nutrition major. It's just very ironic that a lot of students I see who are struggling with eating disorder, that's their major. So it's just ironic, I think. But Sharman is also talking, you mentioned an app that you use in your practice with your clients. Talk a little bit more about the group that you're starting, or maybe it's already starting, and how somebody, if they're listening and are interested in being a part of that group, how they could do that.
Yeah, we started a group 2 weeks ago. We had several setbacks, but it's an 8-week group. It's pretty intensive. It's a very small group. I started out, I was only going to take 5 in the group, just because I believe people do better when there aren't, you know, 20 people sitting around in a circle. Yeah. So we started out with 5. We lost a couple due to scheduling. So right now our group is really small. It is for, because of the nature of it, right now the group that I'm offering is for female clients of mine or clients of the University of Alabama Counseling Center that you guys refer over, just for the eating disorder group. And so every week for 8 weeks, we're covering a different topic. Like the first week, it was kind of just introductions and how did you get here? Last week, we did shame, guilt, repeat. And we talked about shame and guilt and all of that. And so each week, we kind of build on what we learned the week before. So that is something I would be happy, you know, I will offer it again in the, I wanted to offer it in the summer, but I just don't know that I'll have enough interest in it with the students being gone. So if you are a UA student and you are interested in the eating disorder group in the summer, get in touch with me or get in touch with BJ and she can get you in touch with me. And just let me know that you would be interested in being in that group.
Sharman, do you have a website?
I do. My website is www.allthingsnewcounselingservices.com.
All right. Thank you so much for being on the show. This has gone by really fast.
Thanks. And I enjoyed it.
Yes, yes. And I mean, it's something that I feel like it's pretty prevalent on college campuses across the country. And I feel like this is something we need to constantly revisit at least once a year on the show, you know, just to remind people about the treatment that's out there and the support that is here in this community.
Right.
So thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate it, Sharman.
Thank you for having me.
Don't forget, our shows are recorded and podcasted on Apple Podcasts, also on audioboom.com and voices.ua.edu. Just type in Brain Matters and you'll find some of our past shows. Also, there's a link to voices.ua.edu on our Counseling Center's website, and that's counseling.ua.edu. I want to thank the people who've made the show possible throughout the year, really. As always, our Executive Director here at the Counseling Center, Dr. Greg Vanderwall, Terry Siggers at the Office of Student Media. He's been wonderful. My production assistant, again, has been great, Catherine Howell. My colleagues at the Counseling Center who support the show, and of course, the WVUA staff who edit our show and put it up on Apple. And my guest tonight, Sharman Marshall Rutherford. Our next show will not be until the fall, so stay tuned. Hopefully, we will have some more interesting and pertinent shows to college mental health. I think it's so beneficial to talk about this stuff. This is probably, wow, this is starting up our, what year? I started in 2013, so this is a long time that I've been doing the show. So, yeah. So we'll get it going again in the fall and probably do about 12 or 13 shows for the fall semester. So have a great summer if you're listening, and we'll be back in touch and doing the show again in the fall. Take care. Thanks for listening. Good night.
This show is not intended as a substitute for professional counseling. Further, the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you're in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, please contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.